to hear, so I think you have an interesting story to tell us about the analytic solutions for a cyclic universe.
Thank you, Sarah. Okay, so this is a topic. Currently, I'm a postdoc at ASU. I just graduated from USC in August of 2010. I'm starting from October and become a postdoc at ASU. So this talk will be mainly based on this published work, just published by PRD recently, and another paper almost done. It should be unarchived in a few days. So please watch. And this work is initiating with me and my advisor, previous advisor, Isaac Forbes. And now we have some joint force with Paul Steinmeier at Princeton and Neil Druck here. Okay, so let's go to the outline. So I will start with some bullet points of the motivation of this research. And then quickly, I will introduce the model we proposed, and then come to the meat, which is solving this model using the technique coming from two-time gravity. And after that, I will present the generic solution. Also, generic means to us means still without an isotropy. So the generic without isotropy solution. And then I'm going to say with some special tuning of the parameters. Actually, there are special subsets of this solution that is geodesically complete. Means the metric is well defined at every tau. And then I will give a summary and the future
direction. The generic solution means homogeneous but not isotropic.
Homogeneous and isotropic and not isotropic.
Okay.
In open or flat or closed universe. Okay, so motivation. I think the main motivation for me is what happens beyond initial singularity. Because in a standard cosmology scenario with inflation, time initiated from a singularity. So question about what happened before this time is still defined, but I think it's not satisfactory. And however, this inflation scenario solve any other problem, important problems such as horizon problem, flatness problem, as well as generate the scale invariant primordial spectrum. So this means there's something right about it, but can we generalize it? Can we extend this theory to say, can we solve this as a model without a beginning of time? So I think this model, okay, first was presented very early in 1931 by Tolman, but recently by Steinheim and Turok in 2002, they proposed a quadratic scenario that the universe is infinite cycle. There's no beginning of time, basically, and with a slowly contracting phase, it can produce a scale invariant power spectrum, which is called the quadratic scenario. So another model, I think, studied by Robert Brandenburg at McGill, and also I think Patrick Peter, they are trying to have another scenario, which is non-singular. Not singular cyclic solution means the scale factor will not shrink to zero as there's no Big Bang Heat Crunch transition. Okay, and another question we want to ask is what really happened if we cannot avoid the singularity? So what's the best way to describe the property of singularity? So following from the talk I'm going to say today, there are some quantum version of this by solving relativity equation. That's what we're doing right now, trying to use the quantum picture to resolve this singularity. But today I'm going to focus on the background evolution solution. So here comes the model we proposed. So it's a very standard one with Einstein gravity and canonically normalized scalar with the potential looks like this. It's D times cos to the 4 plus C times sin to the 4. And with radiation. So and here the kappa is kappa to the minus 1 is the usual gravitational constant. And by so far there are two parameters here, B and C. By tuning these two parameters, the shape of potential can be divided into two categories. One is with a bounded potential, and the other one is unbounded. And in the bounded case, there are two kinds also. There are the potential never go to negative region, and there are also potential by tuning this B and C, for example, C negative and B greater than absolute value of C, potential will have a negative region and bounded below. So when you spot this, this will automatically generate the essential ingredient of quadratic scenario, that is W much greater than 1. Because when you have negative potential, the W will necessarily, the equation of state will be greater than 1. And if the other case is the one that doesn't have a bound, lower bound of the potential. So for this one, we think this will not produce any interesting physics because this looks unphysical. But in the list of, I will still present bouncing cyclic solution coming from this kind of potential to be more complete. And also this one, potential local potential minimum here, and so the universe can oscillate if you can here to produce a cyclic universe. And in this model, we are focusing on the FRW metric with curvature or without curvature. So it depends on the sign of this capital K. When K is negative, it's open, and K positive is closed. K zero is flat.
Is this special form potential chosen because you can solve the homogeneous equations analytically? Is that why it's chosen, or?
You mean what is it because of technical part of it? Yes, I mean easy answer is yes, but. I believe there is something special about it, but it might take a while to give you a more complete answer. But yeah, quick answer is yes. This particular form we know how to solve. Okay, so by varying this action, we have a U1 gauge field, and we have a scalar field, and then a metric, so we will have Einstein equation, we'll have equation of motion for sigma, and we'll have Maxwell equation. And if we write down the equation of motion in the FRW background, this will be the equation of motion. The first one is the time component of Einstein equation. This row basically is the T00, the U1 gauge field. And this is the equation of motion for sigma and the Einstein equation. So if we impose a homogeneous field A, means A is only function of T, and with this condition, with Maxwell equation, we can show that this combination here has to be a constant divided by A root 4. This is consistent with the equation of motion. So that's why I replace this bit T00 by a constant over A root 4. So now in the equation there are one more parameter to use this row. It's an equation constant. Okay. And also the among these three, among 1, 2, and 3, there are only two independent equations. So solving two of them is equivalent to having all the solutions. So now, before I get into the detailed calculation, I want to first flash you the conclusion I'm going to give, so you know where I'm going to.
Sorry, when you say A mu is homogeneous?
Yes, means it's a function of T only.
Yeah, but I guess it's not necessarily time-like, or is it just, I mean, it's not isotropic.
It's not isotropic. the energy momentum tensor is isotropic, but the AMU itself is not. But what enters the Einstein equation is the T00, is the energy momentum tensor. But you are right. If I insist to write it in terms of a field, then there's no way to write it. Write the isotropic AMU.
Are you saying the energy momentum is isotropic?
Mm-hmm. Yes, the energy momentum is. Okay, so the conclusion at the end I will give is we will solve the model. Basically, I will solve the Riemann equation I just showed in the previous page. And in that, there are several parameters, B and C, which determines the shape of potential, epsilon, which we'll show in a minute. So far, I haven't shown yet, but basically this is another integration constant. And rho is the amount of radiation, and big K is the curvature, spatial curvature. The conclusion will be, if we want to have a geodesic complete cyclic universe, for a single cyclic solution, there will always be a quantization equation for this five parameter to satisfy. Means there will be a complicated combination of these five parameters has to be quantized. On the other hand, if we want to have a non-singular cyclic solutions, then there will always be an inequality equation. Means the one combination of five parameters needs to reside in a particular region in order to have non-singular cyclic solution. So this will be the conclusion. So I'm going to explain how to get these conclusions. So to solve the equation, I have to go back to two-time gravity, and mainly because it's not the main focus of this talk, and also many people already attend Isaac's recent talk, so I will really very quickly go through this two-time origin. So two-time physics was originally proposed by Isaac Wallis in 1998, which is a causal and ghost-free theory based on SP2R gauge principle on the wall line. And following this line, later, I think in 2005, we managed to write down the field theory version of two-time physics, which is an action lives in six dimensions. Actually, I want to say it's E plus 2, because in our current application, when it reduced to two dimensions, we want to go back to four, so it's in six dimensions. All the fields are living in six dimensions. And for pure gravity, there will be curvature and basically metric in six dimensions and one scalar field. But we can add arbitrary number of scalar field and fermion and gauge field. And in this game, we will add, instead of one scalar, we'll add another scalar, and we'll also add the one U1 gauge field. So when you write down this two-time field action, this action itself will have general Polynomial symmetry. And another gauge symmetry called the two-time gauge symmetry. So if I choose part of the general Polynomial symmetry, and by choosing two-time gauge symmetry and solve part of the equation of motion, we can bring the solution back into the action. We can reduce this six-dimensional action to a four-dimensional one. So here the point is this action. It's not written down directly by hand, but there's a rigorous derivation to obtain this action from a higher two-time action. And I will not go through the detail of how it reduced to this form, but I can give you a reference if you are interested. So now, come down to the four-dimensional action. Let's observe this action. First thing, is that there is no dimensional parameter in this action. So when we say this, well, it gives you Einstein gravity, the gravitational constant emerge as a as a gauge choice of this action. So the starting point, there is no dimension for parameter. And the second thing is in this action, there's one arbitrary function of s over phi here. So basically, this is the freedom we can choose. And later I will specialize this to a particular function. But this will be the only parameter we can choose. Only free function we can choose. And another thing is, since I'm using mostly plus metric, so this phi field looks like a ghost field. Actually, it's a ghost field, but because of this particular coefficient in front of the minimal couple of gravity, the whole action has a accidental local biosymmetry, which means if you transform your phi s field according to this law, then the action is invariant. And by using this biosymmetry, we can set this phi to a constant, then automatically this gauge symmetry will kill the ghost. So what I want to say is, this theory is actually ghost free because of the existing of biosymmetry. And interestingly, I think in 2005, Leon and Turok and McFadden also have a paper coming from different origin, not from two-time visits, from the brain scenario. Two brain, and one with positive tension, one with negative tension. And the action with conformal symmetry, when you reduce to the four-dimensional case, exactly looks like this one. So, yeah, this is an interesting thing to point out, that there's two different origin, but eventually gives the same four-dimensional effective action.
Can you explain briefly where the freedom and path comes from? Is it different ways of reducing the higher dimensional thing, or is that this extra function f, so you've got a whole function worth of freedom, is that from different ways of choosing the higher dimensional Lagrangian or different ways of producing?
No, it's this freedom is embedded already in this one. So there's a free function of big omega, the scalar field in six dimension. There is already a free function in the six dimension action. And that free function will reduce to this free function in four dimension.
So, are these two theories equivalent to each other?
Yes, equivalent. This is the gauge fixed form of this version. Yes.
But it's not completely gauge fixed, but there is some.
Yes, not completely fixed. Yes, that's right.
And the gauge, the subsequent gauge fixing will break that biosymmetry.
Yes, yes. And that's the essential technique to solve the theorem.
To solve the model. Okay.
Sorry, just go back a little second. Say that again about F. What depends F from the SP2R? Principle.
As long as the argument is of the form S over phi, the action will have local biosymmetry. And I think this will correspond to, in a six dimensional case, I think there is a homogeneity condition in the SP2R constraint. And as long as the omega means the scalar field in six dimension. Okay, actually, is the scalar potential is omega and s, big S, both of them in six dimension. As long as the potential in six dimension is a function of s over omega, and then the reaction will satisfy the SP2R constraint, which is a homogeneity constraint. So the restriction is that the way it depends on s and phi needs to be s over phi. But otherwise, it's completely free.
So, in what sense is it a gauge? When you're calling it a gauge,
right?
Freedom.
Yes.
But normally, when I think about fixing gauge freedom, there's no physical
Which period?
So you're talking about from here to here, or
if you have a theory with no scale,
right?
And then your gauge freedom introduces a physical observable scale at the end of the day.
Right.
It sounds like not a gauge fixing. It sounds like an extra constraint. Normally I think of a gauge freedom as
I see.
Freedom the different choices are not observable.
Right. All right. So from two-time point of view, you can think of it as so. We are living in a particular gauge, then in that sense, this
the different gauges would look on the surface like very different physics, but
gauging that has to be the same. So, but the particular way of looking at it, which is the way that accustomed to looking at it, is like R has in front of it a constant, which we interpret is the gravitational constant. And that's the freedom here. So maybe you can choose that function to be a constant, since it is a vice state. And that brings you to the gauge in which we are accustomed to think about. But the gauge invariance will be the same no matter which gauge you choose.
So I think the easy way to get around, because I encountered this question a lot. So the easy way to say is, can think of it as a local symmetry. Just think of it as a local symmetry. And you are fixing a local symmetry instead of fixing a gauge. Because some people think when you gauge fixing, you cannot change physics because of gauge fixing. I think this is a definition of terminology. So you can think of it as a local symmetry, and we are fixing a local symmetry.
But is this a symmetry that's actually just something not accessible to us?
that's a good question.
You don't observe the local symmetry.
Right.
So can you tell us again how you get Einstein gravity out of it?
Almost there.
Okay.
The next sentence will work there. So how do I get Einstein gravity? Einstein gravity basically means there's this minimum coupled to the curvature. So as long as the dynamics of phi and s doesn't, phi squared minus s squared doesn't change sign, means if phi squared always greater than s squared, then you can use this local symmetry or gauge symmetry to file rescale the dynamics of phi squared minus s squared to a constant, so which is like this. So if phi squared minus s squared stay positive, then the transformation of phi squared minus s squared under Weyl transformation is like this.
Normally I can't observe anything except for a gauge invariant thing. Normally I can't make an observation to tell me what gauge I'm in. But here, with this freedom, I can do. I'm observing something.
If you go to other gauge
quantity, like Newton's constant is not a gauge invariant.
That's true. You can introduce this k to this, and then that's k in this second. You have to interpret it as being Newton's constant. This is k because the field has a k, right? Each field does have a k. So now if you are free to choose the scale, and then once you choose it, then you are forced to put this as being gravitational. Because there is no other scale.
That sounds maybe like it's a solution, not a gauge.
Indeed, there are other solutions, which is the main reason why we started to investigate. But what happens if it's negative? For example, what happens if it vanishes? So, which is the heart of what we are interested in. Discuss. But I mean, first, you need to recognize how it relates to what you're accustomed to, and then what is there.
But it's true that you cannot measure Newton's constant because it's the dimension of one. You should always measure it with respect to something else.
No.
Because it's the dimension of one. So, as it stands, you don't have anything else. So maybe it's true that Newton's constant is not, in this theory, is not observable.
In other words, you all other measurements, you do it relative to that
that's good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So I think I would say it is where you think of this as a local symmetry. Don't use the word H symmetry. So by choosing this local parameter lambda, you can fix the dynamics of 5 minus s squared to be a constant, 1 over 2 comma squared. And this will be the usual gravitational constant. Under the assumption that 5 squared minus s squared doesn't change sign. And for this subset of solutions, you can parameterize the gauge fixed form of phi and s through the sigma field. So if you define new field sigma like this, then phi squared minus s squared will automatically satisfy this condition. Okay. And with little algebra, you can plug this form back to this action before it gets fixed. Then you will find the action will reduce to Einstein gravity with canonically normalized scalar with the potential of V of sigma and radiation.
Oh, what? It lost a degree of freedom. How did that happen?
Which, where?
Okay, so I'd normally say,
mm-hmm.
And I'll put this in tight string theory language, I'll translate if it's not clear.
Mm-hmm.
I go to Einstein frame, I do a bio transformation, and I start with 2 scalar fields, so I normally say I would still have 2 scalar fields.
No.
Now I seem to only have one.
Yeah, there is only one because of the local symmetry. Because
okay,
the local parameter.
You wanted to do the vial rescaling. The vial scaling you wanted to do before was also a vial transformation on the membrane.
Mm-hmm.
So you're not going to be able to do at least generically both independently.
Uh-huh.
Unless you're telling me there's some miracle.
I see what you mean. So basically, he's talking about the heat.
So height. Just think about vial transforming one of them to, well, if I want to go to Einstein the frame, that will uniquely identify what the vial transformation I have to do to get there is.
No, I mean, transform everything by the same overall lambda. This is it. You just transform it.
You just go to Einstein frame.
Right.
Well, okay, so. If I do normal KK reduction and do, I usually have this problem, I get a wrong time kinetic term, then I go to Einstein frame by doing a vial transformation on the metric, and everything looks great.
Yes.
But I don't, lose a degree of freedom.
Oh,
here you
have
the
degree of freedom. So that in your new gauge, denoted by the sub index E, phi E squared minus S E squared, in that gauge, it's just a constant. So you have lost the degree of freedom because you have fixed the gauge.
That's the definition of the gauge.
That's the definition.
So pi squared minus s squared is a constant.
You can always transform it to Einstein. They have an extra symmetry.
Okay, the point I was trying to make, maybe inarticulately, was their transformation involved about transformation on the metric.
Yes.
So you're telling me that the condition is compatible with that condition.
Yes. Compatible with which condition?
So if I just take if I took your generic metric and didn't do any additional gauge trick and just did a vial transformation to get out of time,
you transform the metric also.
Yes.
That's what I agree. In this fixed gauge, let's call the metric G sub E.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So when you are in this gauge, G sub E is also, it is no more, bisymmetry. So you fix the bisymmetry so that phi minus S is a constant. And then in this gauge, you call the metric G sub E.
Right.
Now, you can get out of this gauge, if you like, by transforming everything by that factor.
Oh, wait, I see.
Right.
So the point is because when you do that transformation, it's just the factor which I normally have to scale away is just a constant. Okay. So the answer is it is compatible.
Yes.
Okay.
Yes. Like in the U1 gauge symmetry among all the AMU, there are only 3 degree of freedom because you can gauge fix one. That's the same thing here. Okay. So I want to say is for every V of sigma you want to discuss, there exists a corresponding F in the in that conformal action of S over 5, when you fix the Einstein gauge, it will give you that particular yield. And in this particular application, since I already introduced this potential at the beginning, so it turns out that the correct F to give you this potential in the Einstein frame is of that form. It's a constant C times S over 5 to the 4 plus B. So this, from this to here, it requires a little algebra, but basically it's one-to-one correspondence. So if I want to study other B of sigma, then I just need to write down another F. And the reason we are writing down this particular F is mainly because it's solvable.
Can you also get a constraint?
Constraint?
Yeah, so I mean, in gauge theory, so you fix the gauge, but also you also have a primary constraint associated with the gauge symmetry.
The primary constraint will be...
This is an interesting thing, but for bisymmetry, there is no such additional constraint, because there is no gauge potential for bisymmetry.
There's no gauge field for that.
I think if there were a gauge potential, then you would get a constraint from which you can solve for the canonical conjugate for that gauge potential.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
But there is no gauge potential. So that's
okay.
So now what I just showed is the conformal action with this particular function F will reduce to the Einstein gravity I want to solve. And the equation of motion is a second order nonlinear coupled differential equation, which in principle is very difficult to solve. However, with the help of biosymmetry, we can choose another gauge, which is called the gamma gauge, gamma frame or gamma gauge, and basically choose the scale factor to be a constant 1 in the FRW metric. And in this particular, is any problem with this choice? So basically, because in the biotransformation, you transform both phi and g. So now I choose the lambda to transform g so that a become 1. So in this particular gauge, the Ricci curvature become a constant 6k. K is the special curvature. And in this gauge, the original conformal action will become this one. The difference is I replaced R by 6K, so now you become like a mass term of phi and S scalar field. And also, if I bring in the special form of this function F, then the action will become two decoupled scalar field phi and S with a H field, U1 H field. And the equation of motion for this action become much easier because at least it's decoupled, although it's still nonlinear. Also, if I like the game I played in the Einstein gauge, if I assume A is homogeneous with this condition, with Maxwell equation, then the row, okay. These two equations are the equation for S and phi, and this is the equation for A. But remember, things before we do the gauge fixing, G is also a degree of freedom. So the equation of motion for metric should still be satisfied, no matter you choose a gauge or not. So the G00 equation turns out to be this one, and here rho is, again, looks very similar to the rho in Einstein frame. The only difference is there is no divided by A squared, because A is 1. And together with Maxwell equation and the homogeneity condition of A, one can show that this rho has to be a constant. So it turns out the G00 equation gives you, this bit looks like the kinetic and the total energy of S field. This looks like the total energy of the phi field, and this is the energy of radiation. The sum of the radiation, the energy should be zero. Okay, this is actually the negative of energy of phi, because I'm using most fast metric. So now, in this case, the phi and s equation decouple is still, we don't know how to solve it, because before we impose homogeneity condition on phi and s, this is still not that solvable. Also, with some people solve some special case with x and both x and t dependence, but here we are in cosmology, we only discuss the homogeneous scalar field. So if you further impose the s and phi s to be only function of t, then you turn all the partial square to double dot. Double dot means derivative with respect to the conformal time. So then this becomes s double dot plus k s plus 4 c s cubed equals to 0. And you integrate it over tau once, then you get the condition means basically this part, s dot squared plus k s squared plus c s 4 equal to a constant. And the same thing for phi. And this, the equation, okay, is here. So it's exactly like mechanical problem, which is mechanics problem, which is particle moving in quadratic potential well. So, and the energy, these two particles, the energy of these two particles are related by rho. The difference must be rho through this equation. So I was meeting with this line because I think this is kind of important in this game. So when we choose the phi gauge, the gamma gauge, the equation of motion for S and phi decouple, and then if we further impose S and phi are homogeneous, then the equation of S and phi become two particles moving quadratic potential with energy related to each other. The energy difference is rho. So now these two equations look very similar. I'm going to rewrite these two equations in terms of F and L.
Okay. Can I ask something about the previous line?
Yes.
Are you sure you can choose you can have the scalar, you can have the electromagnetic field be homogeneous? It seems like you can choose rho to be homogeneous.
Yes.
But then the spatial part of the stress energy won't be proportional to the potential. I mean, because at any given point in space, to have energy density, you need to have an electric field vector pointing one way and a magnetic field vector pointing another way, and then their cross product would be a pointing force. So that'll be a point in some direction.
So for my calculation, the energy stress energy tensor is homogeneous. It's only diagonal, but F mu nu is not it's not basically F E the electric field and magnetic field. They point in a particular direction. But from this E and B to construct energy stress tensor, it is diagonal.
Just a guess.
I rewrite the previous two equations in this form. The kinetic energy plus potential energy is the total energy, and the potential energy is of this form. So F can be either phi or S, and this L can be minus B or C. And this is a mechanics equation problem we encountered in the high school. So by given initial the energy level, we know all the solution. Because basically the solution is in terms of the elliptic function. And I plot the solution. For example, in this case, if you have positive curvature, positive, this is positive, and L is positive, this is positive, so the potential is a parabolic potential looking up. And we know that for this potential, there cannot be any solution for if epsilon or energy is less than zero. So if energy is positive, and I choose the initial point to be starting from zero, and the solution of this particle or this field will be in this form. It's a Jacobi Sn over Dn. And the plot is like this. So basically starting from zero and going up to a maximum and then turning down and oscillating. So it's equivalent to this particle moving, oscillating around the minimum. And this is a mathematical expression that you can ask Mathematica to do the complicated thing. And also, from the property of Jacobi elliptic function, we will be able to figure out the period. This will later become important, the period of this oscillation, which is defined here. So the elliptic k is another function related to Pilate because it is inverse of Jacobi elliptic function. Okay. So I think this is a cute part of this game means you turn the cosmological problem with sigma, the degree of freedom is sigma and a, into mechanics problem with two points oscillating in potential order.
And just to be clear, and the statement is the remaining Einstein equations are redundant with these equations, yes?
Sorry?
So you worked out the constraint, T00, and then the equations of motion for your two, for your scalar fields, and as well as the Maxwell's equation.
Yes.
I was just checking that the remaining Einstein equations are degenerate.
Right, that's right. Yeah. Check explicitly, yeah. Okay, so there are other cases that I would go faster. So in this case, if K is positive, L is negative, and energy is above the critical energy level, this energy level turns out to be K over 16F, or K squared over 16F. Then intuitively you can predict what was going to happen. The particle is going to overshoot this maximum and going to infinity at a finite moment of time. So the solution confirms this intuition, which is this. So starting from zero, and the field will go to infinity. And this will happen periodically. This is the property of this Jacobi elliptic function. And also, we know the period. How much time, how more time does it take for it to go to infinity and come back, which is this function here. So similarly for all the other case, you also can have some trivial case, like energy is just right, just at the critical value, and then field doesn't do anything, stay at the constant. Or you can have, a particle moves in local minimum, and this is a case when K is positive, L is negative, and energy is between zero and the critical energy. Then, there should be a wrong move. So the solution is in terms of Jacobi function again, but the different Jacobi linking function. There's another case which particle is outside the local minimum and it will fall to infinity. So in this case, particle go up to here and use up all its kinetic energy and go back down. It's like this. You go up to this point and then go back. And this also happens periodically. And so now this becomes the K negative case, means in the open universe. And if you have potential like this, this L is negative, energy is positive, then the dynamics is in terms of Jacobi elliptic function again. Okay, I'm just going to go through this. This is the most trivial one. And, So basically, I just imagine particle moving in a potential world. I think that's very intuitive. Okay, so now comes to the sexy part of this game. So we have a very cute description of two particles moving potential well, but how does this really relate to the cosmology? So this is a relation. Because we know the gamma gauge and the Einstein frame are just two gauge fixing of the same series. So they must be related by gauge invariant quantity. And the gauge invariant quantity is this S over 5, because S and 5 is scaled the same way under biotransformation. So from this identity, you can see in the Einstein frame, SE is characterized by this thing sigma, and phi is cos sigma. So the ratio is hypertangent. And we solve S and phi in the gamma frame. So just invert this base equation, then you obtain sigma basically is log of phi plus S over phi minus S. And similarly, the relation between the scale factor in Einstein frame and scale factor in the gamma frame is by this viral rescaling. And we know in the gamma frame, A is 1. So basically, Einstein frame A is e to a lambda. And how do I find e to a lambda is through the definition of Einstein gauge. Because in Einstein gauge, phi squared minus S squared is a constant. And this is basically a biotransformation of the phi squared minus S squared in gamma gauge. So from here, I can figure out what is e to a lambda. Put this to the other side, divided by 6 over k kappa squared, then I obtain e to the lambda is here. So e to the lambda is the scale factor in Einstein. So I have the intuition of two particles moving the quantum potential well, and this dictionary, you automatically obtain the solution in Einstein frame. The dynamics of sigma is function of tau. A is the function of tau. Okay. Okay, so generic solution. So here, so far, you can see in the equation how many parameters we have. We have B and C control the potential shape, and we also have K as the special curvature. We also have E as the energy of the S field, and rho as the energy of radiation. So if you randomly choose a set of five numbers and ask the Mathematica to plot it for you, what do you get? So in this case, I choose K equal to 0, the flat universe. Radiation is 1/2, energy of S is 1/2, and I choose B equal to 1, C equal to 1. So in the Einstein frame, the potential is usual parabolic looking up, and in the phi in the gamma frame, it's you will see phi fields is with this potential, so it will roll to infinity, and S field will oscillate in a finite range. So given these random parameters and ask it to plot what it gives for the scale factor, then you see it ends at some finite conformal time, and actually, if you plot A squared, you will penetrate it. That means A becomes imaginary. So that means the universe is geodesically incomplete. Means there is a specific moment of Big Bang. This is like inflation theory. You start from here, and then after a short period, there is inflation, and then inflation starts, there's radiation, and then there's only there. So genetically, the solution will be geodesically incomplete. However, you can tune this phi, the frequency of phi s. So this is kind of an important part of the gamma frame. So how do I, if I want phi squared minus s squared, basically it's the scale factor, doesn't stay in the positive range. A is phi squared minus s squared. So phi squared has to always be greater than s squared. So if phi is somewhere going to zero at some time, in order for phi squared minus s squared doesn't change sign, s must also go to zero at that time. So that means these two particles moving in different parabola should have some tuned frequency, like integer. So every time when phi roll down to zero, s should also pass through zero. And this relation will give this condition here, relate BC and energy and rho in a specific way. So if I choose
N is an arbitrary integer.
N is arbitrary integer, means whenever when phi pass through zero and go back to zero again, how many times s pass through zero? If n equal to one, means the next time phi go back to zero, s also go back to zero the first time.
And yeah. What is the physical picture? In a frame where it's two scalar fields, one of them is oscillating with an integer number of times per,
mm-hmm.
per one oscillation of the other one. But any, in the frame in which the...
In the Einstein frame is there,
for one field is oscillating multiple times per one cycle of the universe. Okay.
Right. That's right. So if I tuned this pair of the BC, E, and rho in a particular way, if I choose B equal to 2, C equal to 1 half, and rho equal to 0, and I believe K is 0, it's in the flat case, then see the scale factor go to 0 and touch 0, never go through zero and go back. And here the slope is proportional to tau to the 3. The behavior of sigma is at Big Bang Big Crunch transition, sigma is at infinity and it rolls down to zero. When it goes to zero, the scale factor goes to infinity. And then the scale factor starts to turn around, shrink, and there's might be able to grow to negative infinity. So the rule of thumb is that so to have a cyclic universe, initial condition must be tuned so that they both start from zero, phi and s. Because if you start phi from zero, s from non-zero, initially you don't have a positive a square. So they must start from zero at the same time. They need to be synchronized in this way, in this sense. And you want the amplitude of phi is always greater than amplitude of s. Also, you want the frequency between phi and s. The frequency of s should be integer times the frequency of phi. So.
Yeah. Actually, the frequency is okay. The period.
Yeah, the period is the other way around. Right.
Sorry, I just got confused. Didn't you say to go to Einstein frame? I need to set phi squared minus s squared to equal to a constant.
Constant, yes.
Okay.
In the Einstein.
Yeah. Okay, so if I'm just trying to think of what does this look like in the Einstein frame?
Right.
Then I would say, so is this first statement not true? So it looks like you're saying both things equal to a constant equal to zero, but then you just said one should always be greater than or equal to. So
when they're at zero, I think the scope, the lambda, that fits the Einstein gauge. Will diverge, lambda diverge. So it's infinity times zero. So it can be constant.
It's also really simple.
Yeah. But just so the, in the Einstein frame, the case in which, I mean, in the frame where the scale vector is dynamical,
right.
the A goes to zero always corresponds to the situation where the scale, both scalar fields are non-singular in the other case. So the time, in other words, the time you showed some cases where the scalar field diverges to infinity,
right?
But those are not the times when the scale factor goes to zero.
No.
That's nice.
Yeah. Okay, I thought you said that.
Mm-hmm.
Can you go back?
Sure.
So the place where sigma goes to minus and plus infinity.
Yes.
Where is that? So you're saying A is finite at those points?
No, it's zero.
A is zero.
A is zero.
A is zero.
Are there any cases where A goes to zero and
phi and S not zero?
No, you're getting confused.
Einstein frame, A is singular, it's goes to zero, and the sigma is singular, it's goes to zero.
Oh, yeah, would any other frame be field or not? Or, yeah, good side up. Okay.
So if there's another case, if C is positive, B is negative, then the quantization condition becomes this formula. So if I choose, say, B to B equal to 2 to the minus 4, minus 2 to the minus 4, C equal to 1, rho equal to 0, then this equation is satisfied, right? 2 to the minus 4. That's correspond to A equal to 1. A equal to 1, then it is satisfied. Then let me plot it. Okay, so in the Einstein frame, the potential looks like this. The potential goes to minimum and go up, the usual one. And in the gamma frame, phi and s both lives in the parabolic potential looking up. But the potential for s is more steep, so the frequency is higher. And when they start from the same time, then when the phi field goes back to here, S field already do it twice, and then they come back to the origin at the same time. And in this scenario, A turn around at a finite value, and sigma still diverge, but different from the previous case is you can have A turn around at a finite value. So cyclic solution requires fine tuning of initial condition. Without this picture, without this phi s picture, it's almost impossible to figure out what's the right initial condition for sigma field and A. So this is the power of the gamma frame. And this scenario is somewhat close to the quadratic scenario because n, the potential can go to negative and turns around at the finite value. So far I haven't included radiation, but at the time I included radiation, means rho is not zero, the smooth transition between big crunch and big bang will have some particular angle, so it will be a kink at the big bang, big crunch transition. Okay, so next there will be also non-singular bounce case. So imagine I have a closed universe and I have B and C equal to 1, case positive means closed universe, and the energy, and so rho is 0, no radiation. And I tune the energy of phi and s just right at the critical value, so you know that phi field will just stay here and s field will stay in here. So this is what turns out, that the scale factor will oscillate in a finite regime. So this is a non-singular cyclic universe. And the sigma field will also oscillate in a finite value. Sigma field will also oscillate in a finite regime here. And to have this kind of cyclic universe, you need to have inequality condition to be satisfied. Basically, you want the energy is within this range. So as long as energy is within zero to this critical, then you will have the non-singular cyclic universe. So energy of S field between zero and this critical value. Okay. So.
Should try to finish within a few minutes, maybe?
Yeah, almost. I have studied. So many other examples I'm going to just that you imagine. I will not have equations. So you have particle. This is different from the previous one. Because this is when k is positive. So two particles oscillating in the minimum and produce a cyclic universe. Or you can have one particle outside the local potential minimum and it go down and go to infinity. The other one inside the well. And gives you this kind of cyclic universe. And the same thing here. The following one is the
finite bounce, which is what you want to emphasize.
Finite bounce.
a squared or a derivative from zero.
Right, that's the, oh yeah. A, this is also a case of not singular because zero is here. Zero is probably here. So this is a finite.
So here the periods don't need to be
Right. Exactly.
Yes. There,
there's
the
inequality.
It's always satisfied, basically.
Yeah. It's not always, because if you have energy above this, then
that's right.
Then this field can roll back.
But by the energy is less.
Only
than
the energy.
Yeah.
Only the energy.
Right. Okay, the bottom one is the special case of the upper one. This means S field just stay in the origin.
But you need curvature to do that.
Yes.
I need curvature, yes.
It's
this
a positive.
Positive curvature case, yes, exactly. Yes.
And the curvature needs to be able to compete with the potential to be able to get sufficient enough of the
problem. So the last case is okay, so you have five fields can go to infinity and the S field oscillating between positive minimum and negative minimum. And in this case, it's, since it's single cyclic universe, so the period must satisfy the quantization condition here. P is a function of all parameters, and which I already showed in the previous slide. We're not going back. So, and we know the explicit form. So to summarize, we have construct all the possible cosmological solution. Cosmological means it's only time-dependent solution for this theory, including radiation, including scalar field, and in this particular potential. And we also have derived the quantization condition and the inequality conditions for non-singular and singular cyclic universe by going to this mechanics picture of two particles moving in, oscillating in the potential world. Okay. And so what we are going to do in the future is, so this nice cyclic solution, geodesic complete cyclic solution, may not be stable under perturbation. So in order to really understand what the universe is doing through the singularity, we have to, we are studying the Wheeler-DeWitt equation of this model and try to also include the effect of anisotropy and to study the quantum behavior of the universe close to singularity. And also we want to maybe use the existing cyclic model to construct a viable cosmological model that solves horizon and flatness problem as well as generate scale invariant curvature perturbation. And finally, there are also deep questions to be answered, like if two-time phase is the fundamental theory, so that means there's no reason to stop us to choose a solution that phi squared minus s squared will change sign. It just stops us from choosing Einstein gauge, but it doesn't stop us to have this solution. So how do we interpret this solution in the real world? Does that mean gravitational has become anti-gravity? This is something to be understand, to be studied. Thank you.
I thought you said that when sigma and s, when the inequality is not satisfied, isn't that that's a squared being less than zero?
That's a squared will be less than zero. Yes. Yes.
That sounds like a Euclidean case, not like. Why do you call it anti-gravity?
Why I call it, because phi squared minus s squared basically is the number in front of curvature r.
That's
a huge
change signature.
Oh, phi squared. Yeah.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's why it's called anti-gravity. Yeah.
So the question is, I don't know if anybody may have studied. If the dynamics pushes you in some patches of space-time or in the history of the universe, if it pushes you temporarily or whatever into some regions of space-time where the sign changes, and this is what we saw with some of the generic solutions, they do that. and then it comes back, or it might loop again and again and so on.
Generic isotropic.
But there are solutions like that. That's the point. Okay. So whatever you can, whether it's there are solutions like that. So if the dynamics pushes you to some solutions like that, what do they mean? Do they mean something cosmologically? Do they influence our universe that we see today? I have not seen it studied before, but maybe someone has studied it.
I think John Moffat and some of his work has gotten into that kind of a situation. Uh-huh. He's also tried to produce some advanced solutions in some levels of he calls it a mirror time.
And then what happens?
I mean, well, so so Matt, I don't know that any definitive answer, but he does get into this situation where he gets into a square becoming negative.
But the first reaction of a theorist would be just your gravitons become ghosts. So of course you don't see the gravitons in that homogeneous cosmology, but they are there.
They are there. So therefore there would be patches of the universe or periods of the evolution of the universe where the entire universe or parts of the universe may be doing that. And so gravity may look like anti-gravity and so on. But
it's not a well-defined theory anymore because
the theory is defined because it has these classical solutions where the universe comes back. Right? So after if the universe undergoes that and comes back, is there something that you can measure in today's universe? Or is it all, just you should throw away a theory like that? Or is it interesting? That's the question.
If this happens, then actually we'll at least accept that you mean like that. I accept a theory which has ghosts in it, yes?
Temporarily.
Temporarily not, but you have to say that's kosher.
Yeah.
My conservative standards should not be that, okay.
No, but the theory is perfectly fine in the correct patch, in the patch that you recognize, that you know it's.
Well, the point, at least, if I understand this correctly, right, that your argument that you're really safe is breaking down. So it's an issue of you have a local gate to the group, but it's globally, it has issues.
The dynamics tells you, you can go there. That's the point. The thing is that you can maybe one can focus and you construct the right model, namely the right potential, the right interaction, so that it never goes there. And Neil would say anisotropy works just in such a way as to prevent it from going there. We are studying that, and perhaps this is what happens. So you actually don't go there because of anisotropy. We are studying that. But the question is, there still may be, instances or special cases and so on where it does go there. Is there something observable in today's universe, in the cosmology that we study? So this is a complete model. This is a model which allows you to do that.
It could just be that the background is embedded in that region as an artifact there. And so that that you're just saying you find a solution, but it could be that the solution is unstable.
Yeah, this is what they're saying. Yeah. Anisotropy may prevent you from actually, changing the sign.
In that region,
this could be, but there will be configurations of the metric where the anisotropy is not so bad, is small, and then in that case you will be able to go.
This is a question of if you have this catastrophic ghost instability, then whenever you get there, then you have this. I suppose one imagine if you produce huge number of gravitons, and then just your effective description breaks down. So it might be a barrier or something that prevents it from.
But this is what we are trying to understand.
Yeah,
that's the case. Yeah.
So if the theory have ghosts, then you are saying at the beginning there is no ghost, and the Hilbert space changes with time, and later time ghost Hilbert space has some ghost state.
It's just instability.
This is all classic, of course. Right? Unless you would say the theory doesn't make sense unless you can show me otherwise.
It's different than saying the theory doesn't make sense, because the theory does make sense when the sign is right. Well, twice
yeah, okay, some terms and dream words were not by
sorry, we are not talking about a theory that doesn't make sense overall. because what we are talking about, which is the part that you do understand, and I understand that, is when a theory does have goals forever. And then that is a sick theory. But this is not a theory like that.
Okay, so you want to weaken the rules somewhat to say that maybe ghosts are okay for some period
of
time.
But nobody knows that. I mean, I do not accept your very quick answer to that.
It's
something to be studied.
Okay, sure, but I'm saying it's presumptively safe at the quantum mechanical level until you control the voice. Maybe that's like that.
No, because even at the quantum mechanical level, you have a theory, you study it. You haven't studied that. You're only saying that temporarily it goes to a region that it may be that. But that's temporary, that's not quantum mechanics. Quantum mechanics fixes the time and then you study the spectrum. It's not, if you try to study it that way, it doesn't give you that answer. So
this is not something that can be decided very easily.
You can decide
very easily. String theory. If you say, okay, what is string theory? It's supposed to be a string, right? So it's supposed to be a two-dimensional surface. It's supposed to be Lorentzian. It's in Lorentzian space. And it's supposed to split and join. It's supposed to be interaction.